The Magic Numbers had several top 20 hits in the UK. When their debut album was released in the States last year, rock critic Jim Fusilli wrote in the Wall Street Journal, "To call it the debut album of the year might not be praise enough." The Magic Numbers is made up of two sets of siblings. My guest Romeo Stoddart sings, plays guitar, and writes songs. He and his sister are originally from Trinidad, then moved to New York, then London. Their song Love Me Like You went to number 12 in England. It's got catchy hand claps and backup vocals. Let's hear what Romeo Stoddart has to say about writing it, then we'll hear it.
Actually, when I was writing the song, I had the sort of backing vocal in mind for this one. And in the bridge, there's this, like, it's like a real kind of intense building thing. And Michelle started, we had, like, Don't Fail Me Now is, like, the lyric. And it's kind of like, the you know, I'm sort of at the point where it's like breaking point, where it's like it's just really kind of getting to me kind of thing, and she's just building this line, don't fail me now, don't fail me now, over and over, and it just adds to the kind of intensity. And I think lyrically the song was probably the most kind of difficult to bring to the band, mainly because it was like really personal and yeah, and I think they kind of felt like, you know, they didn't really talk to me about what the lyrics meant for ages. And they're like, okay. But yeah, but it's a great one to play live. I'm really proud of it.
Too personal for you to tell us about?
Well, it's just kind of, it was kind of, I used to be in a relationship with, for like 8 years, with Sean and Angela's sister.
Oh.
So, yeah. And so the song was kind of about, like, the end of that, but also, like, I was sort of now starting, like, a new relationship with someone. So it was kind of, and the line is, like, she don't love me like you. So it was kind of a and I've never, you know what I mean? It's, like, it's kind of, like, I don't know, a little strange to talk about, but... But so certain songs, you know, are kind of harder to bring to band, especially like at that point when our relationship had finished and stuff.
Wow, what a set of interconnections and complications.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's time to hear the song. This is "Love Me Like You," and this is the Magic Numbers. My guest Romeo Stoddart wrote the song and sings lead.
All those years gone by.
That's the Magic Numbers, Love Me Like You, from their CD, The Magic Numbers. And my guest, Romeo Stoddart, is the lead singer and the lead songwriter of the group, and he wrote the song that we just heard. Great, great song, great, great, great record. How did you name the band The Magic Numbers?
We had, like, a list of different names, and some were really, really awful. And
For example?
Well, myself and Sean were in a band for about 6 years before the Magic Numbers called Guess. And everyone we'd tell, like, so what's the name of your band? And we were like, Guess. And they were like, oh, well, I don't know, you know. And it was just like this, it was a silly joke at the start, but, like, you know, for that long a time using the name, it wasn't funny anymore. But, yeah, and I don't know, I just kind of thought the Magic Numbers just sounded like a real kind of classic name that no one had used before, and I was surprised because, I don't know, it just sort of said a real kind of, it had like a kind of gang mentality, like, I don't know, like the Rolling Stones, or, I don't know, like the Loving Spoonful, the Magic Numbers. I just really loved the name, and I thought it really worked in with our characters, like the four of us, just kind of represented something that I liked.
You and your sister grew up in Trinidad. How did your family first move there?
Well, my mum and dad were actually born in Trinidad. Mm-hmm. And so they had us there. And my granny's kind of Venezuelan, Guyanese. And my dad's dad's Scottish. And yeah, I mean, we kind of... I lived there till I was 11. And then I moved to New York. And I guess Michelle was about sort of 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it was, I guess it made us who we are, like living there and just kind of growing up as well, because there was this real sort of togetherness, like, I mean, everyone kind of knew each other, like where we lived, and it was just real kind of laid back, as you can imagine, living in the Caribbean beaches, and like everyone just sort of chilling out, and as they would say, liming is like, you know, hanging out. And yeah, and I just had a lot of fun there. And then moving to New York was, I guess, the sort of huge eye-opener that I kind of needed at that point, which was, I just kind of felt like I could do anything then when I moved to, like, I'd be in Manhattan and I'd see, you know, and just see, like, this mad life that I kind of just only seen on TV in Trinidad and kind of never thought I would experience, so.
Now, I think when you moved from Trinidad, it was right after a failed coup.
Yeah.
Is that right? Was that a frightening time to be living in a country when there was a coup?
Yeah, it was really scary because I remember just, we had the TV on and this news presenter that I'd sort of grown up with, seen, you know, for years, like he had like a gun to his head and stuff, and it was a little bit like crazy. And then there was like a curfew, like I think it was 7 o'clock and you couldn't leave the house unless you get shot. And they would have like these huge kind of almost, I don't know, like just these huge trucks with like 20 sort of people and, you know, it's a 20 guys with guns like driving around your house, and it was totally scary. And then our uncle had seen it on the news in New York and was like, look, you know, you guys should come over and sort of stay, you know, my business is doing really well, and, you know, and he was kind of doing huge sort of parties for like the Grammys and Madonna and all the, you know, he was kind of like a celebrity kind of florist designer kind of thing. And he was like, you know, come and work, ask like my mum and dad, and, you know, come and work with us and get away from Trinidad for a while. And we're like, yeah, okay, cool. And it's kind of, my parents are always very sort of like impulsive, and even now, like, you know, it's just like, okay, let's do that. And the next thing you know, we were living in New York.
So were you already writing songs at this point and interested in being in a band?
Yeah, I kind of, when I was even in Trinidad, like around sort of 8 or 9, my granny had a piano and she didn't play it anymore. And she would always say, oh, Romeo, go up on the piano and just kind of hit, you know, a couple white notes and a black note, make up a little song. And, you know, and so she kind of was the person that kind of got me into writing, so I would just make little songs up for her, like little tunes, and she'd be like, you know, she'd obviously love it because I was a grandchild, and then I found myself going to the piano even when she wouldn't ask me, and I would make little things up, and then when I moved to New York, I bought a guitar when I was like 15, just before moving to London, and that's when I guess I started writing words and really kind of thinking, okay, all my friends are in bands and this bug that I've had for years, like, you know, from like seven or something, of wanting to play music and just being obsessed with music, I just knew that it wasn't going to go. So I was like, I'm going to buy a guitar and I'm going to learn it, you know, master it.
So it sounds like you had a real musical family. Your grandmother encouraged you to write songs. Your mother used to get everybody singing when they came to the house. Your mother used to have, like, host a TV show in Trinidad. It sounded like a local version of Star Search or something.
It was kind of like that, but she didn't actually host it.
That's a mistake.
She sort of appeared on the program for 5 weeks running, which was kind of unheard of at that time, because, you know, usually people just go on every week, but they loved her a lot, and people would vote her back and stuff, and in the end, she, I guess it was unheard of because it was predominantly kind of reggae or calypso that appeared on the show, and she sang like opera, so she would sing, like, now and again she'd sing like a Burt Bacharach song or Jimmy Webb song, but mostly it would be like Italian opera or something, which she still sings like around the house. I'm like, I don't even know what the hell she's singing, but it sounds great, you know? I'm like, okay, I don't even know if she does anymore, but she just knows the songs. But kind of music was just always around, and then my other uncle, who I grew up with as well in Trinidad, he was really into country music, and that had a huge effect on me. Because, you know, I remember Patsy Cline, I Fall to Pieces, he would stick this record on all the time. He had like on a little 7-inch, and they would just sit around and they would cry their eyes out listening to this song. And I thought it was beautiful, and I, you know, I understood it or whatever, but it kind of just blew me away that they would sort of put this on, and all of a sudden the mood would change and everybody would be really, you know, sad and crying. And so I used to go and stick it on and listen to it. And I just kind of just felt, wow, you know, music's really powerful. And, you know, it just kind of stayed with me. And to be honest, whenever I hear that song now, because I knew it was one of my granny and my uncle's favourite songs, and they both passed away, and whenever I hear it, I always think back at that time, and it does kind of make me sad, so it's kind of gone sort of full circle. Like,
my guest is Romeo Stoddart of The Magic Numbers. Here's another track from their debut album, The Magic Numbers. You're into now, you're into now, and I don't. Well, what's my name? What's my name? I don't know. Baby, if the tower falls, maybe I can meet you in the morning. Call me if you're on your own, and maybe I can meet you in the morning. You're in denial, you're in denial, and I don't. We'll talk more with Romeo Stoddart of The Magic Numbers after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Romeo Stoddart of The Magic Numbers. He sings, plays guitar, and writes songs. His sister is also in the band. Their mother sang on TV in Trinidad when they were growing up. I guess you grew up in an atmosphere that made singing seem like just a really natural thing that everybody does.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Definitely. But funny enough, I didn't, although I would do it at home, like, my whole intention was kind of, you know, I was writing songs, but I was playing the guitar, and my whole thing was like, I just want to play guitar in a band. I wanted to be like, you know, growing up, I was into like Guns N' Roses, and I was like, yeah, you know, I'll be like Slash, you know, the cool guitar player in the back, and, you know, and or whatever. And I didn't really want to ever sort of like front a band or be the singer or whatever.
You said you didn't really want to front a band. I just wanted to read you something. I don't know if you've seen this, that was written about the band in GQ. And this was like at the end of 2005 when your CD was released in the States. Chubby and hairy are not the words that usually come to mind when describing the latest IT rock act, but The Magic Numbers, this year's most exciting British band, certainly fit the description. What's your reaction when you hear that?
I kind of read that a lot. Like, I try not to read a lot of our sort of press, but whenever I come home, or, like, you know, friends always say, oh, yeah, check this out. This was in The Guardian or whatever. And you know, you read it. So, but, and that, you know, that comes up a lot. Like, you know, they call us chubby and hairy, or, you know, the unlikely looking band or whatever. And I don't know, I somehow probably thought it would affect me more. But, you know, it's, I mean, I am chubby and I am hairy, so, but, you know, so it's not like, it's, I guess, you know, I actually personally get a little bit kind of bored of just seeing bands and they all kind of look the same. And especially, like, we go places or you do, like, festivals and you've got, like, 50 other bands and they all look exactly the same, like, modeled from, this is indie band number one, like, this kind of haircut with, like, yeah. You know, page one, like, you know, this tiny skinny tie and this kind of shirt, and you walk a certain way, and it's like, it just gets a little bit kind of tedious, really. Whereas, you know, I think probably as well as our music being the sort of driving force of everything that's happened for us, and especially the live shows, I think on the other side, I think it's probably been refreshing that, you know, we've kind of come out of nowhere and not, you know, had to adapt to anything. You know, it's kind of like, this is us, accept us, and that's it.
Well, I want to close with another track from your debut CD. And this track is called Long Legs, another one of the songs that you wrote. Do you want to say anything about it before we hear it?
Yeah. Long Legs was probably one of the first of the kind of faster songs that we were writing. And because before that, we would do a lot of shows and it was kind of more stripped down, acoustic guitar, and we had this girl playing violin, and Sean would be on brushes and stuff. And then I kind of, I play the banjo, and I love playing the banjo, like five-string banjo. And I remember us just hanging out one night, myself, Sean, and our friend Steve, and in this nearby graveyard. Sounds kind of dark, but we were like, couldn't make noise at home, so we were like, oh, let's just, like, take some instruments, take, like, a mandolin and a bouzouki and the banjo, and let's just, like, go find a quiet spot. So we found, and this song came out of, like, a late night drinking session, like 4 a.m, and this song just came, and I was like, wow, this is great. And then kind of remembered it the next day, and then we started working on it, and it's a fun one to play live as well.
Did you teach yourself how to play banjo?
Yeah, like, myself and my friend Steve, he plays banjo, so he showed me a few little things, but it's great for coming up with, like, little hooks, and like the guitar line in that, that's like a little banjo fill that I did, and then when I had to do it on the guitar, I was like, all right, cool, you know. So it's nice. I love writing on different instruments. Like, when I write on the piano as well, it's nice to, because with the guitar, I kind of know it so well, so I know what chords to go to almost before I go to them. Like, I can think, oh yeah, I'll do like a minor here or something, and my hand just kind of immediately does it. Whereas I find more little accidents and, you know, sort of, it's a lot freer, basically, like on other instruments.
Harder to slip into the more predictable thing on an instrument, exactly, you don't know as well.
Yeah, totally.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much, Terry. Thanks.